Sherry, do you want to give us a roll call, please?
Sure. Hero.
Yes.
Arnell.
Here.
Agai.
Here.
Beanstalk. Blazik. Brady.
Here.
Brownstein. Dr. Brownstein. Christensen.
He's still in patience right now.
Jermaine. Lout. Snell.
I know Jeff just texted me that he heard my name, so I think he's having some audio issues. But
either way, I counted. That'd be five.
I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Oh yeah, we can.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, we can hear you, Jeff.
Okay.
I think we're still at five. We need either Dr. Snell or Christensen to jump in.
Dr. Yes, Snell, are you with us right now?
Yasmin, who are the six that said they would be present or RSVP they would be present? Maybe we start searching there.
I think Dr. Blazik said he'd be present and is not online yet, so maybe someone could reach out to him.
Okay. Oh.
I think I had said that I wasn't going to be present, but I was able to move things around and get on.
We appreciate it, Ollie. Thank you.
Let me see if I can look at.
I think the six were me, Arnell, Brady, Blazik, Christensen, and who was the other one?
Brownstein.
Brownstein, okay.
Okay, let me reach out to Dr. Blazik.
I sent Randy a text. I'll let you know if he answers.
Thanks, Matt.
I thought I saw on Facebook that Blazik got out of town with his family this week, so I don't know if he's going to make it.
Christensen's here.
That's great, Eddie. Sherry, you want to give us another roll call?
Yes. Hero?
Yes.
Arnell?
Here.
Agai?
Here.
Brady? Dr. Brady? Brownstein?
Here.
Christensen?
Yes.
Snell?
Brady's here. I went to the restroom.
Okay.
All right, Dr. so we got Snell. Our six.
So absent is Beanstalk, Blazek, Germain, and Lout.
Thank you, Sherry. All right, agenda item number two, review, discussion, and action on previous minutes. I'll make a motion that we approve the open session minutes from April 21st. Can I get a second?
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, none opposed. Agenda item three, notice of proposed rulemaking. Jessica, are you on with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
We can. Thank you for being here.
Sure.
I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay. Give me one second. Let me see if I can share my screen. Did that work? Can everyone see that?
Yeah, I think we can all see it.
Okay, perfect. So this is about where we left off. Oh, sorry. Just to give you guys a little bit of a reference. We are in 1302, modernization. Doesn't look like we had too many changes. Does anybody have any questions or concerns with the new E?
I think you can move on, Jessica.
Again, nothing crazy in S. I had a question here. I'll start up at the beginning. So we're in the new F, talking about application evidence, about on-site evaluation. I had a question here. Regarding mobile permit. Dentist performing the procedure at the dental office or dental clinic holds a valid 1301 permit, 1302 permit, or 1303 or 1304 permit. Is that accurate and necessary?
That's from a version of rewriting 1304 that we've moved away from, so I think that can be deleted.
Okay. We have some new language here, unless somebody has an issue with it. I think we can keep moving.
You can keep moving.
New H.
I believe under H we rewrote we rewrote the section in blue in 1301. I think we said like a IV catheter that is patent or functional or something to that effect, didn't we?
In 1301?
Yes, in 1301 where it says, where it talks about the, I think we changed it from that language to a patent IV catheter or something to that effect.
So here's 1301.
Matt, I remember us talking about that, but I don't see that in the 1301.
Yeah, we had quite a discussion on it, and that's what we changed it to. Maybe it didn't get updated. I can look back at it later.
This one right here. Should I use intraosseous access exclusively?
No, that was a different section. The section we're talking about right now, I think, is in regards to the exam for, at the time we were talking about the exam for the 1301, and we wanted to make sure that the provider had a patent IV in place or something to that effect, as opposed to that language that talks about continuous flow of fluid.
Dr. Brady, go ahead.
That's a big red flag there. The section 1301 permit holder shall use intraosseous access only exclusively for emergency situations. I don't think we want to just use IOs for emergencies.
Meaning we don't want to preclude them from using an IV, say, for
correct.
Right.
That's funny. I never would have thought of that, but that's a good catch.
Yeah.
I can see how someone could read that and be like, oh, crap, it's an emergency. I have to start an IO when they have a completely patent IV.
Ollie.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, Jessica's probably the good, best one on here with the words. The intent of this, Jessica, was that people don't use an IO access for like a routine elective procedure.
Is that more accurate? 1301 permit holder shall only use
Why not just take out, I think it's more clear if you take out exclusively, shall only use intraosseous access for emergency situations. Oh, I see. That could still create the same problem.
Intraosseous use, you would start it and it wouldn't be just exclusive to 1301 permit. Intraosseous access use is limited to emergency situations or something to that effect. I mean, we could wordsmith it, but later, but I don't think it's just a 1301 permit. It's like, if the intent here is just to say, we're only going to use it for emergency situations.
Yeah. And that's kind of in addition to what we were just talking about, because we had rewritten that other section that we were talking about. We just need to make it match in 1302.
Do you remember what section that was, Matt? I can't find it.
You know what? Maybe I can find it later. I think it was in regards to the site visit for the 1301 permit.
Let's come back to that rather than spending time trying to find it.
Okay. I'll look for it later, see if I can find it.
Okay.
Okay, so I think this is where we were. Subsection H, 1302 permit holder shall use intraosseous access exclusively for emergency situations. Looks like it should match the 1301 permit language. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
And I like Dr. Brady's suggestion that it should be limited to emergency situations. So someone's not reading that line thinking we have a patent IV, it's an emergency, now we have to start an IO.
So can you explain that to me a little bit more? You want them to only use that during emergency situations, or
no,
they can use it
No,
otherwise,
we don't want them using IO access for routine cases. The use of an IO would be limited to an emergency in the absence of a patent IV. Now, I don't know how you want to wordsmith that, but I think that's the intent.
And I'm sorry, you said patent?
Yeah, patent IV.
Okay. Does that then change what we have in the new I? Here, 1302 for intravenous access, or no, different?
No, that's what I was getting at earlier. I think I think that was that language that's there was something that we had updated, but I'll look around and see if I can find that before we get hung up on that.
Those are two independent statements, Jessica. Go ahead, Dr. Brady.
Yeah, it's when we're talking about this like limitation for IOs, it's just more of a global, not at a permit level. So it's probably the same thing with the indwelling IV catheter language thing that Arnell's looking up.
Okay. Otherwise, we are good with the new I then.
That's what we're coming back to later.
Okay. So unless someone has an issue or more discussion on these subsections, looks like the next big subsection that we have to discuss is O.
Do we just want to match 1301 and 1302 here as well? I think did we finish with this section in 1301?
Go ahead, Dr. Brady.
I believe so. I believe that is the case. Didn't we go through this already, or was there more changes done for the PEDS endorsement?
So I think this is the language in 1301 that you guys are referring to.
Yeah, I think that's correct.
Okay, and it should be the same for 1302?
I think it should. I don't know about everybody else, but...
Correct.
Although, actually, were we planning to give pediatric endorsements for 1302? I think it's section Q. Oh, wait. Yeah, were we planning to give pediatric endorsements for 1302?
I think the idea was we should include it for the sake of being thorough, but I can't imagine there would really be very many general dentists out there, if any at all, that are trying to do IV moderate sedation on a patient less than 8 years old. But if somebody was going to try to do that, I think that they should have to meet the same standard.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, didn't at one point we decide that to do that would require, a residency of some sort?
We did. Sorry, yeah. I jumped in there. So we were going to exclude that 1302 PEDS endorsement for intravenous use. There was a statement that it's prohibited. They can do oral moderate sedation. They cannot do IV moderate sedation for a 1302.
Pediatric.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I remember as well. So it wouldn't be exactly the same. The pediatric endorsement would be removed, but the rest of the language would be the same.
You can have the PEDS endorsement. It's just saying that, you know, it's prohibited and do IV moderate sedation on the pediatric endorsement of the 1302.
Yeah.
Okay, so a 1302 permit holder can have a pediatric endorsement. They can administer anesthesia.
I think it was that they could do oral sedation but not IV sedation on a pediatric patient. Is that what you're remembering as well, Jason?
Sorry, I was muted, didn't realize it. Yeah, that is correct. So 1302 PEDS, we had it at some point that was in there. But I would say, you know, 1302 PEDS is prohibited from intravenous access for moderate sedation.
Heath.
I agree with that. I don't think you should be doing IV stuff with under 8 years old, but I'm wondering just for the simplicity of verbiage and stuff, since the 1303 provider can do oral moderate sedation if they have a pediatric designation, could we just reference for in the 1302 section that the 1302 provider should follow the rules, guidelines, whatever, in subsection blah 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 of the 1303 with regards to a pediatric endorsement, because a 1302 provider can do whatever a 1303 can do, but then it just is delineated that if they are seeking out a pediatric endorsement, they would just follow those same guidelines of the 1303 since it's going to be an oral moderate sedation.
Yeah, that's true. So you're saying it may not even be warranted. But the 1303, though, is, yeah, I get what you're saying, Heath. Good point.
So Jessica might be able, I don't know if she can or not, you let us know, Jessica, but if you could just reference under the 1302 section here, the section 1302 permit holder who desires a pediatric endorsement should follow the rules, guidelines, how are we going to say it, of subsection in the 1303 pediatric endorsement.
And is 1303 not 1301?
I think it'd be 1303 because it would be following the oral sedation protocol, not the deep sedation general anesthesia protocol.
I think we had already worked all of this out in a previous meeting. It may be in a previous version of this document and just didn't get transferred over or something.
I think to Matt's point, I honestly don't even remember stopping in the 1302 section. I missed the first part of the meeting, so I didn't know where you guys were doing there, but it seems like we were way past the 1302 section in our most recent meeting. So I don't know if it's making me think if this is an older version or if Jessica got the updated version, but I could be wrong with that. I just don't remember being that far back. I thought we'd been pretty close to being done, closer to the 1304.
At the last meeting, we went back to the top of the document.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, so for 1302, we basically want to say that if they are treating patients less than 8 years of age, they have to follow the protocols or requirements for the 1303 permit for pediatrics. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. All right, I think that brings us then to 1303. And one of the questions that we had was consider removing the language about incremental doses and not allowing incremental dosing for minimal sedation at all.
This is in the moderate sedation section.
And this section is talking about not needing a permit if it's a single drug, right? So this is actually this section is actually speaking about providing sedation in a non-permitted kind of a setting.
Shouldn't that be its own section outside of the permits, like before all the permits, that type of language?
Yeah, I would think this should be either before or after the 1301 through 1304 permit sections.
So removing this language from the current rule completely and putting it as its own section?
Yeah, I would think
it would just read cleaner because it'd be like you could just post this before all permits and just say like, hey, Dennis, this is what you're allowed to do without getting a permit. And then it goes on to requirements for permits. It just seems lost in a document, like buried into a 1303 permit section.
Now, as a side note to that, I do think we don't want non-permitted dentists who have not received the training that's required for a permit to be doing multiple incremental doses. I think the intent of a dentist just giving a sedative is like single dose and maybe combined with nitrous, but not sitting there giving multiple doses.
Dr. Caputo.
So this was the exact discussion we had in 2013, and it's why the rules were changed then. And now we're going back, at least based on the conversation to this point, we're going back to pre-2013. So we're sort of playing a football game with how we're doing this. The concern at the time was if you restrict the dentist to a single dose administration, almost always they're going to go to the highest possible dose. So the consideration here was try a lower dose first. And if you need to supplement to a higher dose, but not to exceed the MRD for that drug, that would be an approach you could follow. So just to give you some historical perspective and also rationale as to why I would caution not doing that, I do think you could clean up the language, But if you restrict the dentist to just giving a single dose, you're going to have potential issues and problems with them going to the highest possible dose versus selecting a lower dose first. Thank you.
Lifeguard anesthesia.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. I just had a quick question on the 1302 regarding the pediatric endorsement. Brady may have answered this question for me already, Dr. Brady, but can a dentist that holds a 1302, is there a way in which he could work with a CRNA or a physician without having to obtain a 1304 as well? Currently, a 1302 or a 1303 supersedes the need for an 04, so we don't currently have to get them a separate permit. Would there be a way to do pediatrics with a 1302 dentist without having to obtain a 1304 as well? Thank you.
I think right now a dentist with only a 1304 can bring in a non-dental anesthesia provider, and without having to have that. But you know what? I think I just answered my own question. I got myself confused, and I don't need to say anything more.
Ollie. Yeah, so I think the concern that Chase is bringing up here is that, you know, as it stands right now with the current rules that don't require a pediatric endorsement, a 1302 permit holder can bring in, a mobile permit holder or a non-dentist anesthesia provider and take care of pediatric patients. So if these new rules with the 1302E, in the absence of a, independent anesthesia provider, then we want those 1302 permit holders to have to follow the same rules of 1303, right? But I think it's a good point, that Chase brought up to make it clear that a 1302 permit holder, when they bring in a non-dentist anesthesia provider, can, provide, IV sedation to pediatric patients.
Chase.
And again, currently, just working through all this with Susie and the board and, different permits, you really don't know how it affects you until it affects you directly. Currently, if we try to get a person to get multiple permits, they have to give up their other permit. So, Dr. Brady was suggesting maybe they could hold both permits, and that's fine if they can. Obviously, it's repetitive work to have to get them a second permit if they already have one in the past superseded. But currently, if you have a 1302 or a 1303 and you apply for an 04, then the board requests you to give up or decide which permit you want. And you have to give up the other, and clearly these dentists aren't going to want to give up their 1302 or 1303 to get a 1304. So just trying to avoid that scenario in the future. Thank you.
It's my understanding that a permitted dentist doesn't need a 1304. Is that correct? A 1302 permit holder doesn't need a 1304. Is that right?
Right. Sherry, go ahead.
Is correct. If you're currently a permit holder, you do not have to have a 1304.
Dr. Brady.
I think their concern is that, does that mean that they feel like they're limited, a 1302 provided to the level of sedation to a 1302 permit holder? I think that is the question. I mean, as I read the rules, they're not, because they're using a non permanent provider. it's almost the 1304 is its own independent thing. I mean, I do think it would be cleaner if people could have multiple permits, because it just answers that question. Plus, there's a whole vetting process of the 1304 permit that's applicable, even to a 1302 permit holder. But I know I'm not trying to make it complicated, but it just seems like it'd be easier and cleaner if a provider could have both of those permits.
Well, I think the answer is just in the fact that if you're a 1302 permit holder, you can bring in a non-dental anesthesia provider and they can provide deep level of sedation, general anesthesia. So if they're able to do that, they're certainly able to, it doesn't fall back on the 1302 permit holder to have a pediatric endorsement. It just it's passed off to the non-dental anesthesia provider. So, I mean, maybe that needs to be clarified, but, I mean, in my mind, that's pretty clear. Dr. Snell.
Yeah.
What you just said, Dr. Hero, is exactly what I was suggesting. I think it's already in there, written there. If it needs to be cleaned up, we can clean it up. But from what I read and how I interpret it, that's exactly what you said is what I would say as well.
Dr. Arnell.
So the 1304 has a pediatric endorsement on it, right? So when a permitted provider brings in a non-dental anesthesia provider, it's covered already. I don't believe that there is like a loophole in the rule. I think they can see pediatrics.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. Chase, go ahead, and then it'd be nice to move on from this, but go ahead.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it. Dr. Arnell, to your point real quickly, before I was going to ask my next question, in this scenario, there would be no 1304 permit in place. It would be a 1302 that's superseding the need for a 1304. And then, I mean, I liked Dr. Hero's explanation, so that works for me if that's the stance of the board, but just, you know, there wouldn't be a pediatric enforcement on a 1304 because the 1304 this.
Dr. Brady.
Anthony, sorry. The problem with this, I like what you're saying, is if they're not independent things, you can get a 1302 permit to hire a non-permanent anesthesia provider and just start doing IV general anesthesia on peds that hasn't seen peds. The whole point of the 1304 permit is to hold them to the same standard as a 1301 permit. So they have to be independent.
Yeah, I guess.
In that scenario, like you can't just have a 1302 hiring non-permanent providers that have never had pediatric experience and give them that leeway. The game has changed. So it has to be an independent permit. Like a provider should have to have a 1302 and be able to get a 1304 permit.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that. I wasn't suggesting it's one or the other. I guess in my mind, the way it works is if you have a 1302 permit and you're bringing in a non-permitted or a non-dentist anesthesia provider, you're functioning under the 1304 permit at that point, even though you don't technically have it. So whatever the guidelines or whatever rules are under 1304 should then be applicable. And it is a gray area because there is a case where I don't want to get into it. I don't want to derail anything, but
sure. Maybe there's some way to say that just in a statement like, hey, if you have a 1302 permit or a 1301 permit, really it applies to the 1302, not really applicable to the 13. Well, it does because there's a PEDS endorsement for 1301 as well that when they're hiring non-permanent anesthesia providers, they're held to the same standard as that 1304, even with the pediatric endorsement rules and regs. That way everyone is on the same standard.
Yeah. And I mean, I will bring this case up just because it's on point. There is an adverse occurrence. The board, ordered disciplinary action on, and it was a 1302 permit holder working with a non-dentist anesthesia provider, and the 1302 permit holder was not doing the work himself. Now, we didn't find disciplinary action for that, but when you read the rules under 1304, only a 1304 permit holder can be doing the treatment with a non-dental anesthesia provider. So there is a little ambiguity here that should be clarified. And I think, Jessica, if we can articulate on paper that if a permanent holder, permanent dentist like a 1301 or a 1302 is bringing in a CRNA or a physician, they're now functioning like a 1304 permit. Now, we got to talk that out, I guess, because I haven't really thought that through, and I don't know what issues that could pose. But at first thought, I think that makes most sense. Chase, go ahead. So Chase and Dr. Caputo, I want to include you guys, but if it's going to, supersede some of the committee members from speaking, I'm going to shut this down to public. So Chase, go ahead, but then I'm probably not going to call a non committee members for a while.
Sure, absolutely. I appreciate you giving me the time to talk. I just want to get your perspective here. So would your perspective be that, let's say that we're working in educational settings or arenas, or even in a dentist office where a dentist holds a 1302 or even a 1304 permit, but he's not the one directly doing the case, but let's say he's standing in the room overseeing the other dentist that's doing the work. I mean, he's readily available and he's standing right there in the room. Is that, it meets all the safety standards.
I think we're going off on a tangent at this point. I think the conversation needs to go back to a good point, which you brought up, which is how do we treat 1301, 2, and 3 permit holders when they're working with a non-dental anesthesia provider? I'm not giving my perspective as board president. I'm a committee member here, and so I don't want to speak on behalf of the board. I want to give my own perspective. Dr. Snell, go ahead.
I'm just wondering, so in each sec, like in 1302 at the very first, it says a 1301 provider is able to do what a 1302 provider can do, and a 1303 permit, 1302, what a 3. It seems like each one you. So wouldn't it imply that if you have a 1301 or 2, that by default you can do what's in the 1304 as well?
I think, Jessica, you could speak to this, but we don't want to imply anything if we can.
In section 1304, at least in one of the previous versions, there's this section A. Of 1304, it says a section mobile permit requirement as specified in 1301B5, section 1302 mobile permit holder. Those are for mobile permit holders. I just think it would be, we could easily write something in the 1304 that says any of the other holders, them having that permit satisfies the requirements of a 1304. That seems very easy to write something in to make it very clear.
Dr. O'Neill, then Dr. Brady.
So listening to this discussion, it took me a while to actually wrap my head around what the root of the issue is. But the issue is that for a 1301 provider to see PEDS, they have to have a PEDS endorsement. For a 1302, we're saying they can see PEDS to a level of a 1303. And then a 1303 needs a PEDS endorsement. And we also wrote in there that a 1304 needs a PEDS endorsement. But then we have a little vacuum if a 1302 or 1301 permit holder who does not have a PEDS endorsement then brings in a 1304 or a non-dental anesthesia provider to see PEDS, right? So we are requiring anyone who comes in to see a pediatric patient under 8 to have a PEDS endorsement, but that does create a little vacuum where a non-pediatric endorsed, where a non-dental anesthesia provider could come in and see PEDS without a pediatric endorsement. So that's what we need to clean up. because, you know, if I were a 1301 permit holder without a pediatric endorsement, then the non-dental anesthesia provider that I bring in, if they don't have PEDS training, there's nothing to stop them from seeing PEDS and provide general anesthesia deep sedation to them. So I think Jason did find or it did explain this loophole, and I think we just need to close it up. I don't think it'll be hard to close up.
Dr. Brady.
So, you know, if the board is reluctant to issue multiple permits, the only way to go about that is to say if you're wanting to do PEDS with a non-permitted provider, then you have to get a 1304 permit. But, I mean, I think it's just going to be simpler if they get a 1304 permit. If they already have an existing permit, they're getting it for the PEDS requirement. So,
Ryan, do you want to weigh in on Dr. Brady's suggestion of licensees having multiple permits? Does that pose a challenge for board staff? I guess would be the question.
Yeah. So, in my opinion, I think if you have the higher version of a permit, so 1301 through 1303, 2 or 3. There's no need to have a 1304. All it does is create a quite a bit of more work for board staff to try to meet some sort of rule that is, I think.
Then you're going to have to limit them to not have PEDS. Those providers cannot bring in a non-permanent anesthesia provider to do PEDS, or else you're like undercutting all the work of what it takes to do a pediatric endorsement. And why that's important. If it's not important to the non-permanent anesthesia provider, it shouldn't be important to anybody. And then just get away with PEDS altogether. I mean, it makes no sense to have two subsets of rules for people. And one that you have absolutely like no control or authority over to make a dentist to be able to practice that way in a dental office. I mean, therein lies the issue. I think if you want to allow someone have a PEDS endorsement using someone with a non-permanent provider, they should be held to the same standard. The same standard of care should go in for any type of provider that comes in that office, regardless if they come from dentistry or somewhere else.
Yeah, I think for me, you're preaching to the choir. I mean, that's all that's been stated. I think that's how this whole committee got started. Was with, pardon me for calling out Chase. Chase Sossaman came to me in my very first meeting and said that same exact statement that you just ended your comments with, is you shouldn't have multiple standards for multiple different professions, regardless of the profession. And that's why this committee got started, is because of that comment coming before the board. So I don't disagree with that. I don't want multiple different permits. This is from an administrative perspective. I'm, again, like Dr. Hero said, I'm not representing the board. I would prefer from an administrative perspective that there not be multiple licenses or permits given to the same person. It's hard enough to get people to understand. I mean, we have people sedating people now that have no permit at all, let alone one or two. So to have multiple permits, and right. We're understaffed already, so it's not right. A good idea.
Would it work if we just put in 1301, 1302, and 1303, a one-line item saying if you want to work with a non-permanent anesthesia provider doing pediatrics and you don't hold a pediatric endorsement yourself, that you have to get a 1304 permit. Like, they're going to have to just give up their permit and move to a 1304 permit.
I honestly don't know the best solution. Anything to prevent multiple permits being handed out, I think, is the best way to work it. The biggest issue is we already deal with people that don't read the statutes and rules now, let alone a simple email that's sometimes we send stuff that says, please read this in email in its entirety before responding. It's a super short one paragraph email. The very first sentence says, please read this email in its entirety before contacting board staff. Most of your answers will be contained herein. They call as soon as they get an email. They don't even read the first sentence that says, please read the email. So if you write something like that in, I'm not sure that it's going to fix the issue. Anyway, that's the only comment. I have another comment, but I'm going to reserve it.
So, and this is a suggestion. Tell me what you guys think. But if under the 1304 permit section, we have a pediatric endorsement for that permit holder, and then 1301, 2, and 3 reference that if you're bringing in a non-dentist anesthesia provider, you must meet the requirements of the 1304 permit section. Wouldn't that close that loop?
I believe so. I mean, that's essentially what I was trying to get at.
But it would, we're not saying they would have to get a 1304 permit. They just have to meet the requirements for that permit.
Yeah, then it would close the loop. And it gives the board the authority to take action, right? If you get a 1302 doing peds in their office with a non-permanent provider.
Correct. Dr. Snell, and then Jessica, I want to get your opinion right now on what we're talking about. I mean, opinion as far as how that could be articulated, and if you think we're going down a path that would work. Well, go ahead, Dr. Snell.
Thanks, Anthony. I like that idea as well, because I see Jason's point, and as a 1302 provider, I mean, I don't know that I'm ever highly unlikely that me personally would ever bring in someone to see under 8. But as a 1302 provider, I don't want to lose the ability because I have a few cases a year where I want a non-dental anesthesia provider to come in and see a kiddo. I don't want to lose the ability to do the main stuff that I do for the rest of the year and have to go get a 1304. And so if we could make it so that I'm still able to do that a few times a year when needed and keep the 1302, that seems like it should be very doable to make that happen.
Yeah. Jessica, what do you think?
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
So one of the things that we put in, and I don't know if you guys can see the screen right now, but I've highlighted some language in the pediatric endorsement language that we had put into the 1301 permit. And it talks about essentially before administering general anesthesia or deep sedation by any means in the dental office or dental clinic to a child who's less than 8 years of age, you know, this language by any means says to me that even if you're using a non-dental anesthesia provider, if you're doing it for a child, you still have to meet those requirements. You still need to have that pediatric endorsement.
And that's in the 1301 section?
Correct.
So are you suggesting we would tweak that and then insert it into 1302 and 03?
If that is the direction that you guys want to go, which is requiring that even if the dentist themselves is not the one who is giving the anesthesia, this rule suggests to me, the way that it's written right now, that by any means, even if their means is a non-dental anesthesia provider, they still have to have that pediatric endorsement for their 1301 permit in order to have a pediatric patient anesthetized in their office. So I guess if that's the direction that you want to go, that they have to have that permit even if they're not the ones administering the anesthesia, then I think that that's what this language does.
I think that's a really good catch, Jessica, because I don't believe that was the intent of this section, was to do that. Because right now,
right,
1302, 3, or 4 permit holder can bring in a non-dentist anesthesia provider and we can administer general anesthesia. So, good catch.
So I guess my question is that how you guys want to do it? Do you want to require the 1301 permit holder to have a pediatric endorsement, even if they're using a non-dentist anesthesia provider for a pediatric patient?
I would say yes.
So is Dr. Christensen on? Because I think this is it's relevant to the oral surgery community as well.
Yes, I'm here.
Did you hear that last bit of conversation, Eddie? We're talking about if Jessica, you want to restate it for me, and so we can catch Dr. Christensen up.
Sure. So the way that we have the new rule written right now for 1301 permits, it basically says that before you can administer anesthesia by any means, which in theory would include having a non-dental anesthesia provider administer the anesthesia to a pediatric patient who's less than 8 years of age, then you have to meet these certain requirements. You have to have that pediatric endorsement, even if you're not the one who's administering, you're just employing somebody who's administering. And so the question then is, I guess, first and foremost, is that accurate? Is that what you want? You want them to have a pediatric endorsement in order to administer the anesthesia, even if they're not the ones doing it, they've hired, you know, a non-dentist to do it. And then the second question is, if that is the case for a 1301 permit, do you want that to also be the case for 1302, 1303, and I guess 1304?
Well, the pediatric endorsement, if we have non-dental anesthesia providers providing the anesthesia, we have all been talking about all along that we have to have somebody there additionally that's PAL certified. I mean, it seems like it would make sense to me that they have a pediatric endorsement with them if they're going to be sedating a child under the age of eight.
So I understand this, Jessica. We're saying that, say Dr. Christensen, he's an oral surgeon, he's a 1301 permit holder. If he did not have a pediatric endorsement and he wanted to bring in, Chase or Ali to provide anesthesia on a 7-year-old, he would have to acquire a pediatric endorsement before doing so.
Arguably, I would say that yes, based on how this language is written, by any means, I would say yes. There's a decent argument that he would need to have a pediatric endorsement even to hire somebody else to come in and do the anesthesia.
Dr. Brady.
I think the intent is that they have to ensure whoever they're bringing in meets the requirements of the pediatric endorsement. So it's not like, you know, if they're in a rural part of Arizona and a kid has some trauma to their tooth and they have a physician anesthesiologist that lives in that area that is a pediatric anesthesiologist, it doesn't make sense that they have to go through this whole taxing problem to deal with the child at hand. That's much different than if they hire another physician anesthesiologist that's been in administration for his entire life and all of a sudden just wants to help out. But he doesn't have that experience. So I think the intent of this is really they need to ensure that whoever they are bringing in for a 1301 or a 1302 holds the same standards as what is written in a 1304 permit with even the PEDS endorsement part of it. So, I mean, we're talking about kind of like remote situations. Ideally, if you're doing a bunch of PEDS and you have a 1301, 2, or 3, and you're bringing in a non-permanent provider, then you get them they have to do the process of vetting that non-permanent provider and understanding that they're qualified to do so. That they're qualified to meet the standards that everyone else has to do to get the pediatric endorsement. So I think you can write it in there that where this is dealing with oral surgery or in a 1301 that they have verified. And we put a temporary 1304 permit mechanism in place as well. Because really it's the dentist, the permanent provider that's taking on the onus of responsibility to make sure that whoever's working in their office has the qualifications.
Ollie.
I think Dr. Brady really hit the issue on the head. One, as I'm looking at this section C, it's saying that not only do they need a pediatric endorsement, but they need a 1301 permit. And if you have a pediatric dentist, they're never going to meet the requirements of getting a 1301 permit or a general dentist. They're not going to meet the requirements to get that because of the additional training needed by oral surgeons and dentist anesthesiologists to get the 1301. And what Dr. Brady said, is absolutely right, that it needs to be, in the P designation of someone effectively operating under a 1304, they're needing to verify whether they have a 1301, 1302, or 1303. There just needs to be something in there that is a requirement that they're verifying that whoever they bring in has the training to take care of pediatric patients, not necessarily having the requirements to get the P designation in 01, 02, and 03, because it's the person that they're bringing in that needs to be really qualified to take care of those patients.
Dr. Arnell.
So that section wasn't saying that they have to have a 1301. That section is in 1301. So it was just talking that because that section is specific to 1301 providers, it was speaking to the 1301 provider, but it doesn't mean that a 1303 provider then has to go get a 1301. They could only do that by going to a residency.
Right.
But that same language is, found in other sections, but that was just specific to the 1301.
Well, I think that's what Jessica was saying because it says by any means. And I think in our, anesthesia provider brain, when we're reading by any means, we're reading it as inhalation, induction, IV, IM, we're thinking of the delivery of the anesthesia, right? But I think Jessica, when she's reading it, is thinking it more in legal terms by any means. Do I have that right, Jessica?
Yeah, and I think the difference here is we're talking about 1301 is general anesthesia or deep sedation. So it's specific to general anesthesia or deep sedation. When you get down to the 1302 and the 1303 and the 1304, you're not dealing with general anesthesia or deep sedation. You're dealing with moderate sedation or, I'm going to butcher the name, but parenteral sedation versus enteral sedation. So you're talking about different types of sedation once you get into those permits. So in this case, at least, we're only talking about a general anesthesia or deep sedation. But yes, when you go with the general definition or phraseology or meaning behind the term by any means, I think that someone could reasonably interpret that to mean that it doesn't matter if you're doing it through IV or, oral, but like you guys are discussing, but also through a third party administering the sedation. Sorry, did that answer the question?
Yeah. So Jessica, so in order to allow 1304, how do we fix it so that it's clear that a permit holder that brings in a qualified anesthesia provider that's not permitted can take care of these patients?
So I can help you guys craft language for whatever it is that you want to do. You just got to tell me what you want to do. In this case, if you want to allow a 1301 permit holder to hire a third party to administer the anesthesia, and you just want that 1301 permit holder to ensure that their third party who's administering to a pediatric patient meets certain requirements for pediatric patients, then that's great. I can help you guys craft that. If you want them to have, if you want that 1301 permit holder to have their own pediatric endorsement in order to hire a third party who administers anesthesia to a pediatric patient, then that's different language, if that makes sense.
This is Christensen. I mean, I'm comfortable with them, you know, depending on the provider and their abilities, you know, to provide an anesthetic for a child under eight. If that's, you know, I don't have any issues with that. Moving forward. I think it's drafted in the language too, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Anthony, Dr. Hero, is it also, that patient, if he was in a rural area that came in and there was a surge, a 1301 permit holder that didn't have a pediatric endorsement, they can provide an IV sedation for this patient without a pediatric endorsement. And that's been the understanding for me all along.
That's been my understanding too.
Yeah.
Dr. Arnell.
So I think this is getting back to what Jason was saying. If we're gonna create a pediatric endorsement, then it kind of has to be universally received before a pediatric patient is put under. We can't just say everybody else has to get the pediatric endorsement except in these situations where the provider has no pediatric training, they just make sure that the one that comes in is qualified. If it was just left up to everybody to make sure, then nobody should need to get a pediatric endorsement. I think we have to find a solution where it has clearly defined requirements, not a solution where we leave it up to dentists to just decide for themselves whether they're qualified or not.
Ollie.
Yeah, I was just going to say, my understanding with the need for the pediatric endorsement is to make sure that it's the single operator, the dentist who's doing the procedure and administering the anesthetic with their, you know, team. That's really where the pediatric endorsement is for that.
That's not the case, because as written, I have to get a pediatric endorsement to anesthetize pediatric patients, and I'm not the dental provider. I'm not providing the dentistry.
Yeah, so I think dentist anesthesiologists are the one exception to that, but I think for everybody else, it's really the same a lot, right? I mean, for the oral surgeons, for the general dentist who has a 1302, these folks, they're getting the P designation, they'll be single operators for the most part, I believe.
So then why not drop? You see what I mean? We can go around in circles forever on the situation, because it either has to be all one way or all the other.
Right.
Dr. Brady.
I would just put in the language for every single permit holder that if they're wanting to bring in a non-permanent anesthesia provider, that they must meet the requirements of a 1304 permit holder when utilizing pediatrics. And that way, because they have the permit themselves, they're going to have to be able to rescue themselves, so 1301 and 1302. But that ensures that whoever they're bringing in has the same requirements, not necessarily making them get another permit, but they are held to that same standard as the permit of the 1304 if they're bringing somebody in. So yeah. It kind of resolves Ryan's issue, and it resolves the standard issue.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, I think, Jason, you and I are kind of saying the same things now. I think you got it more specific with just pediatrics, which is great. So, right. Jessica, do you have enough that you could maybe work on this portion of it outside of this meeting, and then we can move along right now to try to hammer a little bit more out?
Yes and no. So I just need to know if you want to allow the 1301, we'll just stick with 1301s for right now, if you want to allow them to hire a third party anesthesia provider and not have a pediatric endorsement themselves, but ensure that if they are hiring a third party provider for a pediatric patient, that the third party provider meets certain requirements.
See, I think this question, I think who this affects is the oral surgery community. And so, you know, and Dr. Blazek, did you log in about 15 minutes ago, it looked like? So, Sherry, for the record, Dr. Blazek joined us at about 3:05. You know, as far as that, the question you're asking right now, Jessica, it almost solely applies to the oral surgeons because they're the only 1301 permit holders that would be bringing in a non-dentist anesthesia provider to see a kid. So I mean, Dr. Blazek, Dr. Christensen, go ahead.
Yes. I'm so, my thing a little echoey here. Is that better?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. So I'm a little late to the game and I'm sorry about.
You're muted now.
Yeah, Randy, we lost you. I think you're muted.
Okay, here, I think I should do this. There. Is that better? Can you hear me now?
That works.
Yeah, oh, it is?
Yeah, now you're echoey.
Okay, let me do this then. Let me turn off this. Now you should be better?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Now?
Yeah, that's great. That's
okay, great. Sorry about that, guys. I was coming into the office trying to call everything. So my thought was from the beginning that you're going to have two types of oral surgeons, guys that get the permit for the pediatric anesthetics because they do enough of them to justify it, and those that don't because they don't do enough. And then some that maybe are on the fence and they want to bring in a provider who will get them that number to where they can still get their P designation, but they're always going to utilize a third party. So I would agree with you, Dr. Hero, that this probably most likely affects oral surgeons as far as deep general anesthetics or deep sedations. And therefore, I felt the way it was written was good. So maybe I missed the beginning part where the discussion took place or where there's not a level playing field, I guess. So, but with that,
This discussion sparked because there seemed to be kind of a discrepancy in the 1302 realm or a loophole almost where we're not giving 1302 permit holders the ability to get a pediatric endorsement, which we're all on the same page about. But it left this ambiguity of if that 1302 permit holder is bringing in a non-dentist anesthesia provider, does anybody have a pediatric endorsement at that point? And then this is just kind of permeated into the other rules at this point.
So, the non-dentist provider needs the pediatric endorsement, just like all of us. That's my opinion on it.
And I think we all agree with that, but unfortunately, as of right now, the dental board can't issue permits to non-licensees. So where my suggestion, Jason just echoed it but articulated it better, is let's just, for each one of these permit holders, they, if they're bringing in a non-dental anesthesia provider, it reverts to the 1304 requirements. So at that point, that spells out the pediatric endorsement. We should all be good. I think we should move on. But
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
All right. Ollie, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to ask Dr. Blazek. So I think the question at hand is this. If you have an oral surgeon who has a 1301 permit, but he doesn't have a P designation, you feel that surgeon, after verifying that a non-dentist anesthesia provider does in fact take care of pediatric patients, that he should be able to bring that person in?
Correct. I would agree with that.
Okay.
So, Jessica, I'll go back to you. What more info do you need before you can start wordsmithing this?
I think I got it. So go ahead and correct me if I'm wrong. If you have a permit holder who does not have a pediatric endorsement, they can bring on a third-party anesthesia provider for a pediatric patient, so long as they ensure that that third-party anesthesia provider has the necessary elements, we'll call them, for treating pediatric patients. Is that accurate? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, I think, well, so, Jason, go ahead, because I'm a little thrown off.
Basically, when you say elements, you would just say ensure that they have the standards of a 1304, because then that's going to be all the rules for adults, all the rules for peds spelled out in the 1304. That way, a 1302 provider can bring on a non-permanent provider, and he checks the box that, yes, they meet all these requirements for 1304. I can't get a 1304, but I can vet them for the 1304, which that's what a 1304 does anyway, that they can come in and do general anesthesia on pediatrics because that dentist is attesting that they've met those requirements, is assuring that they met those requirements.
Right, checking a box that basically says that yes, I'm bringing on a third party anesthesia provider for a pediatric patient, but I have made sure that they have PALS, that they have completed CODA, you know, residency, basically, like you said, all of those requirements that are listed in 1304 for a pediatric endorsement.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could just reference 1304 because it's just going to put the standards correct to whatever it is. If they're doing general anesthesia, 1304 points to all the rules and regs for 1301. So I think it spells it out as a point. I wouldn't just say peds, I just say in general. It works because they're permanent providers for anesthesia. They have some educational qualifications there. And so they just have to do the same thing as a 1304, even though they're not getting granted a 1304, they're just insuring it. So it doesn't matter if it's peds or adults.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Arnell.
So, Jason, I think what she was trying to say is the 1304 does have a pediatric endorsement attached to it. So she was just trying to say that if they're bringing them in for peds, they have to ensure that the provider meets the requirements of the 1304 with the pediatric endorsement.
That is correct. And they also need to ensure that they meet the requirements for doing general anesthesia, right?
Yes.
So it's the same thing for adults. It's just that they're referencing 1304 in a global aspect if they're bringing in a non-permanent provider. And if they're doing peds, they have to respectfully look at the peds section too and understand that.
Yeah, I think it just needs to be clarified that in the language, I think it's easy to say that they meet the requirements of the 1304 with the pediatric endorsement to see pediatric patients.
Or maybe you just put in there, like, as just a highlighter, meet the requirements of a 1304. If they are doing peds, they have to meet the requirements of a 1304 pediatrics. I think they're both important. They both kind of reference those standards.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
And it closes both of the loopholes, and it really points out the peds.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that works really well.
Great. Well, so, Jessica, if you feel like you understand the intent at this point, then let's just move forward.
Got it. Okay, so that brings us back to 1303 and back to, unfortunately, incremental multiple dosing.
Dr. Snell.
I think what was talked about before in removing this from this, I like the thought, I think it was Jason that said that it's just kind of hidden here and then it's only in this one section, but really it can pertain to any dentist, and any dentist is probably not going to look in the 1303 section if they're not seeking a 1303 permit. So I think it'd be great to remove this section, not remove it totally, just reposition it somewhere else outside of these permits so that it's more pertinent to every dentist. And then I understand the historical nature of I think it's important to say that you can give up to the maximum recommended dose. And I don't think it's appropriate to limit someone to give incremental doses up to that. But they can't go past that. So I don't think it should be a no incremental dosing, but I like the way it's implied that you can do incremental dosing, start low, that's safe. If you need more, you can give another one, but the cumulative actually, there's a cutoff there where you can't keep going and continue to do incremental dosing, because then you're falling into potential moderate sedation and then you would need a 1303 permit.
Dr. Blasey.
I'm all for removing it. It wasn't in the previous document and not so sure it's needed here. And I was wondering if we had to keep it, could we put it under definitions as far as what incremental dosing is, as opposed to putting it into the main body?
Good call.
You absolutely can put that in definitions and I guess my question would be, in what circumstances would you want to allow incremental dosing up to the maximum? Just in 1303?
Ollie. Yeah, so to answer your question, that's what Dr. Caputo talked about earlier, right, where this is for the non-permitted person doing oral sedation. And if they can only do one dose, they might start at the max, which could be too much for that patient, where instead they could do a smaller dose and give incremental dosing up to a max. Does that answer what you're asking about?
I think so. Because we don't see this language in 1302 or 1301, I believe. So we're only talking about 1303. And if I'm hearing you guys correctly, we want to take it out of 1303 and just make it general applicability to all of the permits. Saying that. Go ahead.
I'd say it would actually be applicable to non-permitted dentists.
Right.
So to all dentists, even those, especially in particularly those that don't have a 1301, 2, 3, or 4 permit.
So the comment that I have here is consider removing this language from 1303 and then not allowing incremental dosing for minimal sedation. What I'm hearing now is remove this language, put in a separate section that applies to basically all dentists who are not permitted under 1301 through 1304 and say that they can only do incremental dosing up to the maximum. Is that accurate?
Right. Yes.
That's what I would agree with, yeah.
Well, I like it if we're going to keep it, yep.
Okay. That'll bring us down to subsection B, where we're talking about obtaining or renewing a 1303 permit. And one of the requirements being the PALS. And the question is, should this, one, is it necessary? And two, if it is necessary, should it be moved to subsection C, dealing with pediatric endorsement?
Can you repeat that question? I'm sorry.
Sure. So we are here at six, which is a requirement of obtaining or renewing a 1303 permit, just in general. And the question was, if it's necessary, number six, should it be moved to subsection C, the new C, because it relates to pediatric endorsement?
I think you're correct on that.
Yeah, I'd agree. Remove it and put it in subsection C. Yeah.
I would say the same for seven.
Okay. Next question that I had was relating to the pediatric endorsement for the 1303 permit. In number three, we referenced the 1302 permit. Just needed to know if that was accurate or if it should be referencing something else.
Yeah, I think that's a typo.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be 1303.
I agree.
So it should be completing cases with a practitioner who maintains a 1303 permit with pediatric endorsement or section 1302?
Heath, just jump in when you want.
Hey, isn't that correct to have 1302? Because if I read this right, interpreting right, it's saying someone who has a 1302 permit or 1301 permit, pediatric endorsement could go in and do sedation with the 1303 permit holder that counts towards their cases for a pediatric endorsement.
Correct.
So then it should be a section 1302 permit with the pediatric endorsement or section 1301 permit with the pediatric endorsement.
Correct.
So I think it was right the way it was written.
Well, I thought we got rid of 1302 peds.
No, we didn't get rid of it. We just said you have to do what a 1303 does.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, I would just say any permit with a pediatric endorsement at that point. Then.
Yeah. That's a great idea. Why can't we just say that? Yeah. Because that's what this is trying to do. It's trying to say, look, if you need more pediatric cases, here's how you can get them.
Dr. Arnell.
Jason is right. We did just about 30 minutes ago, we decided no pediatric endorsement for a 1302 permit holder.
Dr. Arnell, I don't. If that's the case, then we need to go back because my understanding was you can, as a 1302 holder, you can have a pediatric endorsement, but you're only to do it under the guidelines of the 1303 and the way that's done.
Yep, you're right. You're totally right. Sorry.
Yeah, that way, just cleaning this language up, just say a permit holder with a pediatric endorsement just covers it.
And not to make it any more messy, but what about what we were talking about earlier about the 1301 non-P designated who brings in a non-dentist anesthesia provider? Can that count towards their cases as well?
No, because we're talking about peds. You're meaning like if I don't know. I mean, I think that's going to be very difficult for a 1303 to vet and to try to build up their cases.
Oh, because this is going to be oral conscious. Oral,
yeah.
Moderate sedation, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't think anyone doing general anesthesia is coming in to do oral conscious.
Right. No, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
So we want to allow the 1303 permit holder who's trying to get a pediatric endorsement to do cases with any other permit holder, as long as that permit holder has a pediatric endorsement. Is that accurate?
Correct.
Okay. Which means that they could have a 1301 permit with a pediatric endorsement, 1302, obviously another 1303, and a 1304. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what Ollie was bringing up. I mean, the 1304 is going to be a little bit different because that's a general dentist with no educational background that's hiring a non-permanent provider. So I would just leave it very simple to permanent pediatric endorsement providers. But I get what you're saying, the 1304 with the peds is technically that. So you may have to spell it all out, the 1301 to 1303.
Okay. But not 1304? Or it could be a 1304,
right,
likely?
The 1304 with the PEDS endorsement doesn't have the educational qualifications to do it. The 1304 with the PEDS endorsement is hiring someone that has the educational qualifications. So I think for this particular situation, you just say 1301, 1302, 1303 pediatric endorsement.
Okay.
Dr. Caputo.
So we had this discussion before, and I'm trying to wrap my head around how a dentist who would like to obtain a 1303 permit just graduating from dental school can meet the training requirement when they may have never done any cases with anybody during dental school, so they don't have any exposure that way. And there are no programs out there that they can go to that would provide them exposure to doing oral sedation cases. So I really feel like this becomes a restriction of practice of sorts, to prohibit a dentist who would otherwise get the training qualification to obtain this permit, but they couldn't do it because they need these 20 cases that is next to potentially impossible to get without A, having access to these various sources of training, which would be people coming to their office or being in an office, but that would be for 2 years potentially, or whatever that time may be, or finding a course that provides that type of exposure. And those courses are just not out there. Now, if you want to change this and make folks get a moderate sedation permit just in general, then just do that. But to me, this doesn't make the dentist any safer or better prepared to treat this patient population. It just creates a impediment to them to get this. I find it disappointing that we're making it so difficult for a dentist who wants to give a patient oral medication, regardless of their age, that they have to meet a requirement that's just not possible for them to meet. And I don't know how we wrap our head around that.
So the way that we've handled this, I've actually researched this quite in depth because I've had to talk to several training programs on this. Is they do have training out there for this, but it's experiences, not necessarily that they're administering. They can't administer. You're correct in that. There's no training program that's going to allow someone to come in and say, you can administer this because it's a license and insurance issue. So none of them are going to touch it. So what they do is they say experiences. So basically they are training these dentists as learners with 20 clinical experiences. And yeah, there's a lot of variation in quality of training programs, to your point. But there are programs out there that do train for this.
So how many so through your research, how many did you identify? I've identified
not two. Many. Not many. You are correct. It's very limited.
Well, could you have a number? Curiosity. One, two.
That was 3 years ago, and 3 years things could kind of change. But I think 3 years, I think we identified two programs. It wasn't many. I think it was two or three.
The only other thing I'll put out to your consideration, because I thought a lot about this, nobody's thinking about the adults in any of this. You know, we talk about pediatrics being so much more fragile, I guess, or more thoughtful. I think any patient that walks into your office, you need to be thoughtful about. And you can kill a patient regardless of their age if you're doing things incorrectly or you have problems or challenges. And what about the person that doesn't see any adults, but they have a permit? Let's take a dentist anesthesiologist, for example, who only sees kids. There's nothing prohibiting them in the current rules from seeing adults anytime they want to. Are we concerned about them? What about the pediatric dentist that decides they want to see an older patient who maybe is outside of their area? There's nothing prohibiting them from doing that. So I struggle with this a little bit, is that are we looking at every patient here from a safety perspective, or are we just looking at a single patient population?
So not to get in a great debate here, because we definitely need to move on. There is vast differences in kids and adults. Kids are not small adults by any nature. They have a whole subset of airway complications that can arise very quickly and dramatically. And adults, you are correct. You're only good at what you do, and you are correct in that. The pediatric population, we've met with this in subcommittees. Many states have been endorsing pediatric currencies. I think it's still important, and I stand behind it.
I'm not questioning that, Jason. What I'm questioning is you can come up with the same challenges with adults, particularly adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities, adults with syndromes, adults that have significant airway issues because of those syndromes or their growth and development issues that nobody is maybe taking into account. So they can have significant problems too. My point is, we're going all this way to say, regardless of what other states are doing, I understand that as well, but just because everybody's doing it doesn't mean it's the right thing either. I'm just wondering what thought has been given to the person who doesn't see any adults. There's no restriction on them. And I wonder about that. That's all. And it's not to argue either. It's just to raise the issue.
Dr. Blazek.
My reason why I raised my hand, is, you know, I really appreciate Dr. Caputo's insight on a lot of this because of how long he's been, doing anesthesia and his training, his background, as well as his interaction with this exact committee in the early, you know, late 2000s. And, you know, it's a tough conversation to have, Dr. Caputo. And I will tell you, this pediatric endorsement all the way across the board we've mentioned before is not a knee-jerk reaction, but it is due to this common outcry across the, you know, the nation about, hey, how are we taking care of pediatric patients in the dental office when they go to sleep? I appreciate your input about, like, hey, if this is what we're trying to do, then just make them all get IV sedation permits, you know? Or is there another way around this for us to address the sensitivity of putting kids to sleep in the dental office? And your other point is well taken too. Like, all of us on this committee are going to say, look, don't put someone to sleep that you're not comfortable putting to sleep or that you don't have experience with. And I think all of us on this committee would be like, yep, we wouldn't do that. Our bigger concern is how do we protect the public from these outliers? And it's a hard conversation, as you just said. You know, you're not saying don't do it this way, but think about it. And it's a difficult conversation or topic to make everyone happy, but yet provide safety to the public. And I agree with all your comments, but I don't know what the answer is. And I'm sorry to talk in circles, but I just want to let you know we're sensitive to what you're talking about.
Matt.
I was just going to say, in general, any program that you go to receive training for sedation, anesthesia, all of them cover adults. And I think the reason why children are singled out is because not all of them cover pediatrics. And I think that's why the push for a pediatric endorsement is out there, because everybody's trained in adults, not everybody's trained in pediatrics. That's just my two cents.
The only other thing I wanted to add is that what you're talking about, make everyone get an IV moderate sedation permit, that was done in Mississippi. But I don't know if that's necessarily, that is a lot of educational requirements for like a 1303 PEDS endorsement. But I understand what you're saying. And I do think when we talk about patient selection, the PEDS is a big population of patient selection that do require some sensitivity to it.
Randy, you had your hand up and then down. Was that okay? Then Jessica, why don't you move us along?
Okay. So I think that brings us to, so we were in subsection D about obtaining a 1303 pediatric endorsement. And basically you have two pathways of doing that. You have to have your PAL, and you can either do the CODA residency, or if you don't have the CODA option for one reason or another, then that's when you do the 20 cases. And it sounds like as long as those cases are done with a 1303, 1302, or 1301 permit holder with a pediatric endorsement, we're good with that. Is that accurate?
Can we just put, let's just keep going and put an earmark there at some point, maybe to come back and address it. Is that possible, Anthony?
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree.
Thanks, Anthony. Thanks, Dr. Arrow. Appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah.
Need to make a note, just tell me what the note should say. What do we need to come back to?
How do we make it so a new dentist can acquire this type of permit in what is a seemingly probably impossible task as we are currently? So just, you know, I think we need to look at that, like Dr. Caputo said.
And
because
maybe,
he's, yeah.
I'm sorry, Randy, I didn't mean to cut you off, but Dr. Caputo, maybe you could look into that a little bit for the committee and see what programs are offering. And then, if this really is an impetus to, licensee getting their 1303 permit, then maybe we need to fine tune that case select, that case number.
That's what I'm thinking. I doubt the case that the programs are out there. I'd be willing to work with Dr. Caputo. Like, how do we just make it where a new, that's a great example. How does a new grad have the ability to move it? Even a guy who's doing it 5 years saying, I want to start doing this. It should be in their armamentarium in some fashion. Because with adults, we're saying they can do it.
Jason.
So isn't it here that if they're trying to obtain this permit, they can work with another permanent provider to gain those experiences?
Yeah.
Like I don't see how that's that taxing of a thing unless it's like, you know, I'm not talking about like a training program, but it the way it reads, because this is to obtain or renew, and they're saying they can just work with another permanent provider with a pediatric endorsement. It's not necessarily saying a CODA accredited program. So I don't think it's that taxing for them to get to this number.
I'd say it's a whole lot easier than the residencies you and I did. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing is, realistically, Jason and Matt, is they're going to bring in a dental anesthesiologist or a CRNA or a medical anesthesiologist, or God forbid, an oral surgeon, but I doubt they would do that. And they're going to put them to sleep, right? And they're not going to do oral sedation on them.
It's different. Yeah, you're right. You are correct.
So are they going to pay, you know, $500 an hour to come in for an oral sedative? So that's, I think, the difference. So these doctors, these dentists, they want to just do oral sedation. So
you almost have to say that they have to do it to that. The sedation has to be the level that they're trying to obtain. You're very good point.
So I would like to just move on so we can get through the document and meet our deadline, you know, for September or whatever that is. But I think this is something that we can come back to at the next meeting, at the very beginning, and like let's hit that for the first 25 minutes and then go back into the document and finish it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Jason.
Hey, I know we're running on a time thing too, but one of the agenda items, one of the things I discussed a very long time ago was about the PSO and reporting. And I know we have a deadline now of September, and it's probably the very last priority on all this. But when I talked about it, it seemed like we had unanimous support on it. And I didn't know if that was something that we needed to circle back and look at.
Jason, what PSO? I don't see what you're referring to.
The patient safety organization. Essentially, is that someone is able to report something like a near miss or something of that nature to a patient safety organization, and they get a serial number for it that's totally protected by law, cannot even be subpoenaed, that they get, that the board gives some leniency to that person. Under certain conditions. And so that it was on our agenda item. I think it's at the very bottom, but it basically sets out a certain set of rules, because I know it's important to Jermaine about reporting. It's important to me about reporting, and understanding what that has done in general aviation has been so significant. I think it could help our dental community in a patient safety fashion quite substantially.
I'm not sure we're agendized for that.
It was once upon a time. I saw it there because I even questioned whether it was, and they showed me. But
I mean, I think we're all going to be in agreement with it. I'm sure. I just,
right. Yeah.
Do you want to comment on? Well, what I can tell you is the agenda item we're under right now is definitely, unfortunately, not part of that. So if we were going to get to that, we'd have to move out of this to stay compliant. But Randy, go ahead.
Jason, as important as I think that is, I would suggest we make that our last agenda item, like you said, just so we can stick to the timeline.
Yeah.
And maybe that's something that we eventually, if we create this standing committee, that we as a group push. I totally agree with your comments, but like I believe we got some pressure on us to try to get this through.
Yeah.
Okay, Jessica, you want to keep us moving?
Okay, I think that brings us to the new E, and I think this was really a question that came up in my discussions, I believe, with Dr. Brady, and the issue here was we say 30 hours, and I believe the ADA guidelines is 60 hours. So the question is, should it be changed?
When we met in subcommittee for this, it was we decided to stay with the 30 hours.
Yeah. Right. Because it's more related to the anesthesia, not like general dental education, which is what the ADA is talking about, isn't it?
This is the 1302. I thought we were at the 1303. No, the 1302, they do require 60 hours, and that is the ADA's been longstanding requirement was 60 hours. I'm sorry, I thought my head was wrapped around 1303. So
we are in 1303.
Oh, 30 hours. The little note on the side, I thought it said 1302. So 1303 was 30 hours and 1303 was 30 hours. 1302 was 60 hours. And the hands-on experience, that's the big question right there. It's that Caputo brings up, and that's what causes a lot of the training things. They call them experiences instead of actually administering.
Dr. Caputo?
To Randy's question, the issue here was, this is training to do moderate enteral sedation versus moderate IV. So a lot more involved with starting an IV, titrating drugs to effect, than training a person to administer a drug do that appropriately. So it's actually one of the unique things about Arizona. If you look across states, I embrace this passionately. Because I teach it to residents as well as dentists, and I think it's just something that's very valuable to our licensees. And so I think keeping it at 30 is more than enough at this level of training and education for this type of sedation. So I would applaud you all for keeping it at 30. Thank you.
I'm good with keeping it at 30. Yeah.
Yep.
Great. Then let's keep it and move on, Jessica.
Okay. And we don't need to put anything in there about hands-on?
No, I think this looks good. Yeah.
Then moving on, I don't have any other comments or questions, but if you guys do, just tell me to stop. All right, that brings us to the new subsection H. I think we can get rid of this comment. Obviously, we'll have to renumber everything. Okay, So the current language is PALS in a practice treating pediatric patients. And here the suggestion is that we change pediatric patients to patients 8 years of age or younger. And I think that's appropriate.
This is Christensen. That's under eight. So it's seven and under. It's under eight.
Yes.
But we've had it. Thank you.
So I'm not, that's fine as it's written. I'm understanding is what everyone's agreeing with, right? That they can complete ACLS or PALS or an advanced airway management course.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. So I'm good with that. Then let's, yeah. I wasn't sure if there was another question is all, I guess.
Dr. Arnell.
I'm just wondering what we consider a recognized advanced airway management course.
Do we have that defined at the beginning, Jessica?
We have recognized continuing education. That, I believe, is defined. I don't know that we have it defined specifically for advanced airway management.
Because I think, I mean, we're trying to set standards based on measurable things. I recall a long time ago this was discussed, and at the time I think this was removed because it was decided there was no way to decide what a recognized airway management course is. So I just wanted to throw that out there. I believe at one point the committee decided to remove that and just stick with ACLS and PALS because it was measurable.
Chase.
Yeah, thank you. Currently it's you have to submit that course to the board for their approval, and the board has to approve it before it's recognized. So I don't know if that helps or doesn't help. But for example, we have an advanced airway PowerPoint that has been submitted to the Arizona Dental Board and has been approved by the Dental Board, and then it's recognized.
Thank you, Chase.
Would it add clarity if it said recognized by the board?
I have questions on the process of that. I mean, the 5.5 years I've been on the board, I've never seen anything come across our meeting to approve a course. So I would need some input on that by Ryan, I think, particularly if we're going to put that into rule. Sherry, do you want to clarify that?
Yes, actually, what Chase said, that is correct. Historically, if there was an airway management class, it did have to come before the board for their approval.
Thank you, Sherry.
And that was prior to you sitting on the board, Dr. Hero.
Appreciate it, Sherry. Thank you. I like to pretend that nothing really happened before I got on the board. Heath, go ahead.
I just wonder, since we've defined what a recognized continuing education is for that advanced airway course, could you just put verbiage in there that would say something of a recognized continuing education course, I don't know, that includes or that emphasizes advanced airway, something like that, so it's already written in rule in the definitions, and you don't burden the the board was having to go through all of those, you know, potential courses that are going to be submitted to them, but we've already defined what continuing education is.
I will say the definition for the recognized continuing dental education is quite broad.
I would suggest maybe we put a pin in this one, move forward as well. I don't know how we're going to come to a resolution on that right now.
I agree.
I would just leave it as is, Jessica, and highlight it, and we can move on.
I think Section D is a repeat of the upper part, Section H. Other than we added, you in Section D, you added until the meets guidance for recovery. So I don't know if you need Section D. You say all that in Section H.
Matt.
I just wanted to say I have to switch devices, so I'm going to be gone for a minute or two, and then I'll need someone to let me back in. I apologize.
Sure thing. And for the sake of minutes, do we know if Dr. Brady's still with us? I know he had a 4 o'clock conflict.
I'm with you.
Okay.
Great. About 30 more minutes.
Okay.
I think you're right, Dr. Blazek, that D can be removed because of what's in H, right?
That's what I'm thinking, unless others feel different or Jessica feels different because it's a different heading, I guess, or whatever. I don't know. Maybe you can't do that.
Sorry. Reading. 1 second. Comparing what's in H to D.
They're slightly different, right? Because H is having the permit holder give the responsibility of caring for the patient to the anesthesia provider, where D is the permit holder is maintaining responsibility, even though we have someone else and that is more qualified in the administration of anesthesia.
Well, and it goes on. It says, hey, the permit holder, you cannot start another case until the other patient's recovered. That last sentence is the only real difference. Which again is very ambiguous because if your second case isn't a sedation case, well, why couldn't you start it as long as the anesthesia provider's still monitoring the patient?
Right.
So that's why I say get rid of D and, you know. Or add up an H, the anesthesia provider may not begin another case until the patient is fully recovered. But I think that's implied.
So we're comfortable getting rid of D completely?
I'm all for it.
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay.
So sorry. We're still on a 1304 for intravenous access. Is this what Matt was talking about, the new infusion, is this like a concern of someone like reusing this stuff?
I think it might come from a long time ago. Previous to this current iteration, if I'm not mistaken, and Dr. Caputo could comment, a lot of people were, especially oral surgeons, would mainline a patient. They'd put a butterfly in, and they would just, push Brevetol or whatever through them. And so it was created that, look, you need to use an IV bag or whatever. And, on this level, though, I'm not sure, why we have it in there, I guess.
Yeah. I just think C should just go away.
Yeah.
If someone's like reusing stuff, they should be reported.
Well, I think
that's a different governing agency for infection control.
Yeah, I think this was written back in, remember it was like in, when it was like 2010, 2011, there was those like GI centers that were reusing their tubing, and there's a hepatitis C outbreak. And so this is like, these were written, I think Dr. Caputo probably could confirm if I'm accurate in that, but it's probably around that time that they put this in, because there were people out there reusing IV lines.
I don't know if we were that astute to what was happening globally, but I can tell you that if a dental office can reuse something, they'll reuse it. I see folks having offices sterilize their nasopharyngeal airways, even though they say use once on them. I see offices that would use one IV bag throughout the day with one set. So I think the whole idea here was just to clean that up and to make responsible, appropriate decisions. Thank you.
Why in H2A, where it says during the provision of anesthesia station by, and then it has highlighted dental anesthesiologist, and then says, I think you can delete dental anesthesiologist, right? And it just says by the anesthesia or sedation provider.
Yeah, that's correct.
And then also, if we're going to remove the language from section C here, we should probably mirror that in the other sections.
Yeah, that's correct.
You guys are saying we could remove that just because that's current standard of care?
Yes, that's correct.
It doesn't need to be said because it's standard of care.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Well, yeah. I mean, I will say there's an office that we took over, just not a dental office, actually, it's a vein center that we took over just a few years ago. And the guy that we replaced was still, they told us, oh, yeah, he would use the same bag, mixed propofol in a 500cc bag of saline, and then he would just use that on patient to patient. That was just a few years ago. So I don't know. I don't think it hurts to keep it in there, to be honest, for patient safety. But I don't know.
Well, I'd love for the board to comment, or Anthony, I forget, Hero. I mean, is there any reason to justify this being in there, like Ollie is saying, where if a case comes up and you find out that they're reusing the bag or the line, then it gives you some merit to say, okay, here's why we're going to reprimand you.
I think the only time you'd want something like this in here is if there is ambiguity about the standard of care. So like say the provider that did this was going to provide literature saying it's appropriate to use one IV bag on the same IV bag on five patients. And here's all my literature to support that practice. Then it can put the board in a little bit more of a difficult position, but I don't think that really exists with this. I can't imagine anybody being able to defend reusing items like this. So if the standard clears that standard of care is that clearly defined, I don't think it needs to be in the rule.
Yeah, I agree. No one's going to defend that.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. It gets down to some basic things that we'd have to, if we're including to this level, this degree of rules, you could list a bazillion different rules, but some of them are just implied in the standard of care that if that happens, someone's going to, they'll have issues with it if it gets taken.
Yeah, I mean, we're not listing in rule you can't sterilize oral airways or ET tubes. I mean, I don't think this needs to be in there.
I think that it would behoove any of you to sit in on an investigative committee one time and just kind of hear how the discussion rolls. But our kind of catch-all violation is 32.1201.14, which is unprofessional conduct. And with that, we use evidence to support why we feel that licensee violated that standard. And then we make decisions accordingly. And so I think the less restrictive you are in your language allows that type of interpretation to occur.
Good input. That was
good
great.
Point.
Mm-hmm. Very good point. And I agree. That's a worthwhile thing to do to get more familiar with these investigative committees. That's a great point.
And the same is true with a board meeting. I mean, and those are open. You can always log in and listen to it virtually or via telephone, and it would be helpful.
I just heard the chair of the investigative committee is better than the chair of the board.
No question about that, Anthony. No question.
This is Jessica. Just to clarify, so this particular language is just talking about the permit holder ensuring that the third party anesthesia provider is not reusing their bags.
I think you just take that out anywhere as like reference to that. For the reasons Anthony said. Because even if you have in a 13, even if you're bringing someone in, it's still that dentist and that permit holder's responsibility for what practices happen in that office. There was a case in Georgia where they brought in a non-permanent provider that were doing things to patients. And the dentist, that person went to jail for a very long time, but the person 100% responsible for it was the dentist from a financial standpoint. So, I mean, whatever happens in that dental office, the dentist is going to have to ensure that standard.
If everyone's okay with that, we'll move on.
So this might be a good spot for us to stop. You know, I don't know that we want to start the 1304 rule at this meeting. I think that's going to take some time. Dr. Brady, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Can we just scroll past 1304 real quick? I just kind of want to glimpse, not to go into it, but kind of a global aspect of what's past the 1304.
I think it's going to
red lines.
The adverse occurrence discussion and the 1304, and then hopefully we can wrap this up.
Okay. Can you go to the very bottom of this document? Just this. I think it's in this document. Just scroll to the very bottom if you can, Jessica. Yeah, that's where it's at. It is in this document. But, yeah, either we get to it or we don't, and it's appropriate place. It's at the very end. Those are just comments at the very end talking about another subject, but we've gotten past that already.
Okay.
And that's the language right there. So we're good.
All right.
Ali.
Yeah, just one thing. I agree to not try and dive into the 1304, but I think it was like December or November that I sent out an email to everybody basically saying that what's in this right now with the, you know, this anesthesia certificate for non-dentists, the 1304 language is kind of like a blending of two different paths that we were discussing going that kind of got put into this. And it's, for lack of a better word, a dumpster fire. I had sent like kind of a cleaned up 1304 section that doesn't have a whole lot of marks. I didn't know if that's something that we could use that as a jumping off point rather than trying to go through this because it's.
Ali, can you correct me if I'm wrong though? Didn't we go through a lot of the 1304 revisions, an entire meeting of my revisions? Shouldn't we be working off of that? Cause I felt like we had like a lot of support when I went through the 1304.
Yeah, that's
so that would be the most current version. So I mean, maybe like on the next visit, if just people want to redline things, it might be appropriate to do it off of that version.
That one.
Do you agree?
Yeah, we had a really good meeting where we covered the 1304 from Jason's recommendations. That was a great meeting. I think we should keep what we worked hard on for that from that meeting.
Yes, yeah, and that was a rewrite from the original. It had no other commentary on it. It was from the original.
Yeah, could that maybe get sent out with the next packet?
Yeah, Ryan, maybe you or board staff can take care of that. And can we make sure Jessica has that as well?
Yeah, we can work with Jessica. To my knowledge, I thought that this was the most current version.
That was my understanding as well.
Maybe Jason can just take a look at it before the next meeting and make sure that the that it is the most current.
Oh, yeah, sure. I think Jessica's correct. The only reason I said it is because of Ali's comment. But I think Ali was in that meeting with us with the 1304 too, where we were going through it. At least I really hope he was. I believe he was.
I'm not sure if I was, but because this still has that 1305
next meeting
for non-dentists, right? Like, just keep scrolling down, Jessica.
Yeah, if you guys can see in my comments here, I do have a comment from April 19th of this year. So that says to me that we have gone through the 1304, particularly with, I think, Dr. Brady. And then even though, yeah, there's interspersed here. So we've got comments from July 6th of 21, but then we also have updated comments from April of 2023. So I think this is the most recent version.
You were there, Ali. That's when we talked about the temporary permit. The temporary we basically went through the entire 1304.
Yeah, we did. We got through the entire thing in one meeting. And that's the entire meeting was only 1304, but it would be good just to look at it. And especially if Ali could look at that version too, because, you know, right now is the time to have those discussions.
So this is the part that I was more, see, it has the new 1305, who is just, I think, scrolled down a little bit, Jessica. Yes. The anesthesia certificate for non-dentists.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the thing we had discussed that, and that was when we were told that the board can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it may be that we just are omitting.
We just didn't get to that part.
We didn't get that far, Ali, I think. And so, I'm sorry, we didn't get that far. So technically we probably would just, because the board said we couldn't do that, I guess, so we would delete that part and reinstitute this whole 1304 thing as well as the ultimate version of SB 1602.
Right.
Right.
Well, great. Hopefully, next meeting we can wrap up 1304 and the adverse occurrences, and we may be finished with this task.
Do you want me to delete then the language for the proposed 1305?
Hey guys, yes. I bought 30 minutes, but not a minute more, so I got to jump off. But thank you guys.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Brady.
Thanks, Dr. Brady. I think probably delete it. We know we can't do it. There's just no way around it. But I do like it from a historical point to review it and read it. So is there a way just to keep it in until we get there? As that way, if someone wants to review it, they can.
Yep, we'll leave it there. Because I think when Dr. Brady and I had talked offline that we had discussed not necessarily giving certificates for non-dentists, but allowing and providing for the board to kind of track non-dentists who were already working with dental providers. And I think that language and those forms may cover a lot of what's in here. So I can leave it in here and then we'll discuss it as we get to it.
Perfect. You know, and it could be language that we share with the medical board, the osteopathic board, and the nursing board for their registration.
That's a good point too, Ollie. Yeah.
Okay, then I think we should adjourn this meeting.
Second,
third. Yep. Sorry about my tardiness.
No, appreciate you being here. Okay, everybody, we will, we'll see you on June 20th, right, Ryan? June
20th. Yeah.
Okay, appreciate it. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Jessica.
Thanks, Dr. Hero. Thanks, Jessica.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye, guys. Good night.